Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, Chinese migrants are increasingly choosing one country for work or study, Japan. John Russell and I have that report. Then we hear an everyday grammar lesson all about discourse markers. We close the show with the lesson of the day. But first,
Chinese migrants are going all over the world, from Mexico to Thailand and beyond. But one country has become increasingly popular among Chinese migrants, Japan. Many Chinese who choose to move to Japan are wealthy or highly educated. They like the country's ease of living, rich culture, and immigration policies that favor highly skilled professionals.
Jia Jia is a writer and speaker at the University of Tokyo. 8 years ago, he was briefly detained in China on suspicion of writing a call for China's top leader to resign. Jia planned to move to the United States, but after experiencing the coronavirus outbreak in China, he was in a hurry to leave, and his American visa application was delayed. So he chose to go to Japan instead. In the United States, illegal immigration is particularly controversial. When I went to Japan, I was a little surprised. I found that their immigration policy is actually more relaxed than I thought, Jia told the Associated Press. Li Jinxing is a Christian human rights lawyer who moved to Japan in 2022. Li sees similarities to a time over 100 years ago. Back then, Chinese intellectuals, such as Sun Yat-sen, the founding father of modern China, went to Japan to study how the country modernized. On one hand, we hope to find inspiration and direction in history, Li said of himself and like-minded Chinese in Japan. On the other hand, we also want to observe what a democratic country with rule of law is like. We're studying Japan. How does its economy work? Its government work?
Over the past 10 years, Tokyo has softened its position on immigration. The policy change was a result of the country's low birth rates and aging population. Foreigners now make up about 2% of its population of 125 million. But the Tokyo-based National Institute of Population and Social Security Research says that percentage is expected to reach 12% by 2070. Chinese are the most numerous newcomers to Japan. Of the 3 million foreigners living in Japan last year, Chinese represented about 822,000, government data shows. That number is up from 762,000 a year ago. In 2022, China's zero-COVID public health policies led many of the country's young or wealthy citizens to leave. There is even a term for it, run shui, using the English word run to suggest running away to places considered safer and wealthier. For intellectuals like Li and Jia, Japan offers greater freedom than China. But for others, such as wealthy investors and business people, Japan offers property protections.
A report by investment migration company Henley & Partners says nearly 14,000 millionaires left China last year. That is the most of any country in the world. Japan was a popular destination for Chinese millionaires. Q. Edward Wong teaches history at Rowan University in Glassboro, New Jersey. Wong said a major reason is concern about the security of wealth in China. Protection of private property, which is the cornerstone of a capitalist society, that piece is missing in China, Wong said. In addition, the weakening Japanese yen makes buying property and other local assets a good deal. And while the Japanese economy has not had major growth recently, China's economy is facing problems. The property market is in crisis, and stock prices have stayed at the level they were at in the late 2000s. If you are just going to Japan to preserve your money, Wong said, then definitely you will enjoy your time in Japan. Internet-based business leaders are among those leaving China after Communist Party crackdowns on the technology industry. For example, billionaire Jack Ma, a founder of e-commerce company Alibaba, took a position at Tokyo College, part of the highly respected University of Tokyo. So many wealthy Chinese have bought apartments in Tokyo's costly buildings that some areas have been called Chinatowns or digital Chinatowns. The term describes how many of the homeowners in those places work in high-tech industries. Life in Japan is good, said Guo Yu, an engineer who retired early after working at ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok. Guo does not concern himself with politics. He loves Japan's snow in the winter and is a super fan of its hot springs. He owns homes in Tokyo and in other places. Like Guo, many Chinese moving to Japan are wealthy and educated. The Japanese government has been careful about who it lets stay, placing importance on people to fill labor shortages for factories, construction, and health care for the aged. It is crucial that Japan becomes an attractive country for foreign talent, so they will choose to work here, Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida said earlier this year.
Chinese ballet dancer Du Hai said he has found a chance to use his talent in Japan. Leading a class one recent weekend, Du showed dance positions to a class of Japanese students. Du liked Japan's large ballet community, filled with professional groups and talented dancers. But he was also worried about warnings that Japanese people were unfriendly. Such warnings turned out to be false, he said with a laugh. Now, Du is considering getting Japanese citizenship. Of course, I enjoy living in Japan very much now, he said. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
Watching an old American movie, the crime film Dirty Harry. You have heard that one part of the film is very famous in American culture. You watch the scene, which sounds like this.
You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
A sudden, strange thought comes to your mind. What is the purpose of the word well? You have heard different English speakers use the word in different ways, but you are not sure what it means. In our everyday grammar report, we will explore the common adverb well. We will show you how Americans use it while they are speaking. Do not fear. Unlike an unexpected meeting with Dirty Harry, this report will be painless.
Adverbs are one of the most difficult subjects in English grammar. They are difficult because they represent a large group of words that have different uses. In general, the definition of an adverb is this: a word that describes a verb, an adjective, another adverb, or a sentence. Adverbs are often used to show time, place, or a way of doing things. They can also show a degree or measurement of something. Consider the sentence, "I really like English grammar." The adverb "really" changes the meaning of the verb "like." The adverb "really" increases the force of the statement. There are also sentence adverbs. They limit or describe the meaning of an entire statement. Sentence adverbs also provide more information about the sentence. These are sometimes called conjunctive adverbs or discourse markers. Regardless of the name you choose to call them, the purpose is the same. They connect sentences in the same way coordinating conjunctions do, but they provide a different kind of information. Here is an example. Let's consider the statement, "I love English. However, I do not love English grammar." The word "however" is a conjunctive adverb that shows a contrast or comparison is coming. You can read more about words like these in an earlier everyday grammar story called Contrast and Concession.
Today, we are considering common conjunctive adverbs or discourse markers and how they are used in everyday speech. Let's go back to the word well. As you heard at the beginning of today's program, well can have a few different uses. The first use is to show a contrast or even a disagreement. Consider this line from the ending of the American film, Some Like It Hot.
You don't understand, Osgood. I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect.
Here, the speaker uses well to show that a contrast is coming. The first speaker, the actor Jack Lemmon, expects the second person to become angry when he states he is not a woman, but a man. But Osgood reacts in an unexpected or contrasting way. He does not act surprised at all.
The second use of well is to show uncertainty, especially in answers. Consider this exchange between two friends.
Do you mind if I borrow $5?
Well, I'm not sure if I have any money with me.
In this example, the second speaker is a little slow in responding. The word well shows that she is not sure if she has the money. Or maybe she knows she has $5, but she does not want to say so. Whatever the case, the point is that well serves as a word that shows movement between the question and the answer. This transition shows that there is some uncertainty.
The third common use of well is to show a transition to the end of a conversation. Consider this example. Imagine you are in a business meeting and your boss makes the following statement.
Well, this meeting has been very productive.
In this case, the word well is showing a transition to the end of the meeting. Your boss is showing that he wants the meeting to end soon. In American culture, this is considered a careful, indirect way to end a conversation. However, if a speaker directs your attention to the word well, then the meaning changes. The statement can take on an angry, tense sound. Consider the difference between these two statements.
Well, this meeting has been very productive. Well, this meeting has been very productive.
The first statement is a respectful way to end a meeting. The second statement is a tense, perhaps angry way to bring a meeting to an end. If you heard the second statement in a business meeting, then you should know that something is wrong.
Think back to the movie scene you heard at the beginning of this report. Now that you have learned about the word well, consider what Dirty Harry might have meant. Like any good crime film, we end with a few questions. What do you think Dirty Harry meant when he said well? Does he use it in a way that has the same meaning as the uses of well we have discussed, or does he use it in a different way? Leave your answers in the comments section on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com, or on our Facebook page. Well, I guess that is all for today's program. Until next time, I'm John Russell.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
Has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
My name is Anna Mateo. And my name is Jill Robbins.
And I'm Andrew Smith.
You're listening to the lesson of the day on the Learning English Podcast. Welcome to the part of the show where we help you do more with our series, Let's Learn English. This series shows Ana Mateo in her work and life in Washington, D.C.
In lesson 18, Ana tries something new at work, reading the news. Her boss, Miss Weaver, is coaching her on how a professional journalist should read. She wants Ana to give the facts without showing any emotion.
But we all know Ana. It's hard for her to do that because she becomes so excited about each story she reads. Let's hear some of the lesson.
Hello from Washington, D.C. Today at work, I am reading the news for the first time. I am really nervous, but my boss, Ms. Weaver, is here to help me.
Now, Ana, remember, when we read the news, we are always reading facts. We never show our feelings.
Sure thing, Ms. Weaver.
Great. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Let's try the first story.
Hello, and welcome to the news. A new book is very popular with children and families. This is it. It is about a lost duckling. The duck's mother cannot find him.
Stop. Ana, when you say the words duck and duckling, you look really sad.
I do?
Yes. Sad is a feeling.
Sad is not a fact. Sorry. Let me try again.
I see. Ms. Weaver is trying to teach Ana to read objectively. That means to tell the facts without adding your own feelings. Ana shows her feelings both in her face and in her voice.
Andrew, you know, our listeners might think the opposite of the adjective objective is subjective. In some cases, that's true. But there's another word we use when we talk about reporting news. When someone presents the news in a way that makes it seem worse or more shocking than it really is, we call it sensationalist.
Subjective means we show our personal feelings or opinions about something. When we do that with the news and make everything seem terrible, you would call it sensationalist. Now I see why Ms. Weaver wants Ana to read the news objectively.
Yes, we've all seen what happens when the news is sensationalized. People get worried. So Ana gives it another try. Let's listen and see if she can do it better the next time.
Okay, she's trying again. And go.
Hello, and welcome to the news. A new book is very popular with children and families. This is it. It is about a lost duckling. The duck's mother cannot find him, but a family gives him a home.
Stop, Ana. You are doing it again.
This story is very sad.
Well, that didn't go so well. Did you notice that Ana changed the way she said one word, him, the second time she read it? Listen to that again.
The duck's mother cannot find him.
I think that's because she's feeling so strongly about the story. But we hear a shorter form of pronouns quite often in American English.
One example of shorter forms is that phrase we use to encourage someone trying something new. Go get 'em. Here, M is a short form of them. But we never shorten me, it, or us because those words are already short.
If I was in the studio with Anna, I'd tell her, go get 'em, when she tries reading the news again. Maybe she can get it right the third time. Let's find out if Miss Weaver gives her another chance on a different story.
I have an idea. Let's read the second story. She's reading the second story, and go.
Okay, let's try the first story.
She's reading the second story.
Hello, and welcome to the news. In Indiana, a grandmother is the first 80-year-old woman to win the race car 500. That is awesome.
Stop. Stop. Anna, please. No feelings.
Right. But it is awesome that an 80-year-old grandmother wins a car race.
Just the facts, Anna.
Right. Hello, and welcome to the news. In Indiana, a grandmother is the first 80-year-old woman to win the race car 500. She rarely talks to reporters, but when she does, she often says, "Nothing can stop me now." I am very happy for her.
Stop, stop, stop. Anna, you cannot say you are happy.
But I am happy.
But you can't say it.
Why?
This is the news. Happy and sad are feelings. You can't have them in the news.
Okay. I got it.
There's another useful expression. Anna says, "I got it," to show she understands Ms. Weaver. It's a little informal, and it's a shorter form of, "I have got it."
If you listen to the rest of the story, you'll find that she finally does understand what Miss Weaver's trying to teach her. And her boss uses the same expression, too.
What can I do, Miss Weaver? Take out my feelings and put them here on the news desk?
Yes! Yes! That's right! Now you've got it.
Once again, I'm Andrew Smith, and you're listening to the lesson of the day on the Learning English podcast. To review, we've learned some short forms for pronouns like im or em.
But now we're almost out of time.
But I think there's just enough time for a little chant with our reduced pronoun forms. Are you ready, Jill?
Let's give it to them. Listeners, try to repeat after we say the lines.
Can you find him?
I can't find him.
Can you see her?
I can't see her.
Did you tell them?
I didn't tell them.
Did you get it?
I got it.
Well, that's all for the lesson of the day today. You can learn more on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. You can also find us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. And thanks for listening to the Learning English Podcast. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr.